Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today, we report on an emergency conference of health ministers from across West Africa. The meeting was called to fight the Ebola virus.
The outbreak in West Africa is unprecedented in the history of Ebola outbreaks.
Then, we report on how non-governmental organizations are working to try to stop the spread of the often deadly disease.
With each passing day, the demand on agencies who are active on the ground has been increasing, so we are stretched to our limits now.
The fight against the rising number of Ebola cases in West Africa. That is our subject today on As It Is. Health ministers from West African countries met in Ghana last week for emergency talks about the Ebola virus. The World Health Organization says the disease has killed more than 500 people in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone since February. Hundreds more have been infected. Last Wednesday, WHO officials said there have been at least 50 new cases of Ebola in Liberia and Sierra Leone since July 3rd. They said that no new cases have been reported in Guinea in the past week. But the number of suspected cases and deaths continues to rise almost daily in Liberia and Sierra Leone. As the meetings ended, a top United Nations health official said the Ebola outbreak could last several more months. But Keiji Fukuda was reported as saying that it is impossible to clearly predict how much farther the disease could spread. Police and medical workers are on duty at security positions near the town of Kanima, Sierra Leone. Officials are forcing people to be tested for the Ebola virus. Some of those infected try to avoid being tested. They want their infection to remain a secret. Peter Piot is the director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He says this is the largest number of Ebola cases since the disease was first identified in the 1970s.
The outbreak in West Africa is unprecedented in the history of Ebola outbreaks because it involves three countries at least, capital cities, multiple sources, and that will make it far more difficult to control.
Ebola causes high body temperature and bleeding. Victims may experience vomiting, the involuntary emptying of the stomach. They also may have diarrhea, the uncontrolled expulsion of body wastes. The virus is spread through contact with the blood or other fluids of infected people. Doctors say a lack of understanding about the disease is partly to blame for how fast it has spread, and largely unguarded borders between the affected countries make it difficult to contain. Shekmar Khan works at the Kanema Government Hospital in Sierra Leone. He says families often bury Ebola victims in secret. He notes that when family members touch the body of the loved one, they may get infected themselves.
By the time people are dead with the Ebola, they are more infectious than all. So if they take care of their burial on their own, 10 more will be infected.
In neighboring Liberia, Elizabeth Smith lies bleeding on a hospital bed. She is a healthcare worker. She became infected with the virus after caring for people who had it. Her co-workers are doing what they can to help, but she has just a 10% chance of survival. Philip Azuma is the district health officer. He says Liberia cannot fight the disease alone.
We are calling on the international community to come and support the ministry. Right now, we can't do it on our own. We need the international support.
But Peter Piot says communities need more than just medical help. He says they need to educate people about the disease and how to stop its spread.
Fear of the virus and distrust of authorities and of the health system probably is as bad and as dangerous as the virus itself. And what I think is needed now is a massive information campaign, but not just facts, but involving community leaders, the media, the local media, more than disease experts.
Health workers bury the dead in the countryside without leaving markers with the names of the victims. The disease is so easily spread that the workers leave disinfectant every step of the way. The chemical liquid destroys bacteria. The workers' protective clothing is buried along with the body. The number of dead is rising. Medical workers say efforts to stop the Ebola virus have not been strong enough. The aid group Plan International says the Ebola outbreak in West Africa could become a health crisis in other areas. The group is calling on West African countries to work together and appealed to the international community for more support. Dr. Unik Krishnan is the head of disaster preparedness and response for Plan International. He is very worried about the situation.
This is a serious outbreak which has got serious regional dimensions now. It is not a global health crisis at this stage, but it has got the risk if we don't contain at this stage, it is possible that it can get out of control and even and reach other places. So this outbreak needs all the support from the rest of the world so that we are able to stop its spread and save lives, help people and communities who have been impacted with this.
Plan International and other organizations are helping local officials with containment and prevention efforts. They are also treating people and supplying medicines and medical workers. But Dr. Krishnan says all of the effort has not been enough.
We are talking about countries with some of the weakest health systems and health infrastructure, and with each passing day, the demand on agencies who are active on the ground has been increasing. So we are stretched to our limits now. This outbreak needs a much more coordinated response at the global level from developed countries and those who can afford both human resource, technical specialists, and other infrastructure and other machinery to contain this.
Dr. Krishnan says health officials need to improve how they identify the disease within affected communities and at border stations and airports. He says health workers also need to publicize even more messages about methods for good health and cleanliness. And he says people need to be told how the often deadly disease is spread. And that's our program for today. It was based on stories from Henry Ridgewell in London and Jennifer Lazuta, reporting from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar, Senegal. I'm Christopher Cruz. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another As It Is, here on the Voice of America. The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. The end of the World Cup does not mean the end of international competition in Brazil this year. A major football event will happen in the South American country later this month, but with teams of robots playing the game, which is known as soccer in the United States. The robot teams are guided by teams of humans from around the world. The event is known as RoboCup. Technology students at the University of Pennsylvania are trying for their fourth victory at the competition, which is held this year in the coastal city João Pessoa. The students have won the last three RoboCup competitions. Watching robots play football is similar to watching children play the game. The kicks are not good, there is a lot of falling down, and people are there to guide and support the team members. Jin Chao Lee is one of the leaders of the University of Pennsylvania team. He says one goal he has for the robot team is to make sure the machines can find the goal and the ball. He also wants the robots to be able to know where they are on the playing field. And he wants the team to be able to better control the walking and kicking abilities of the robots. Qin He is another leader of the robot team. She says the abilities of the robots increase every year. Ms. He says the U.S. team is meeting its goals. The robots know the difference between the colors green and red, and they can decide where to go and where the ball is on the playing field. She says if there are three robot players on the field at the same time, they will communicate with each other to decide the different responsibilities for each robot. U.S. team member Christopher Akasuka hopes for another victory in Brazil. The team has won the RoboCup the past 3 years in the Netherlands, Mexico, and Turkey.
They have really good team play right now. As long as our detection is good, I think they'll be very competitive. We just hope to, compete against the really good German teams because the Germans always do very well.
Mr. Akasuka says RoboCup is an exciting technology competition.
Each team develops their own software, so basically it's just a competition of who has the best software, who has the best, decision-making at a given point. So it's really exciting.
The event begins July 19th and ends July 25th. Some RoboCup participants hope to develop a team of robots that can play against humans by 2050. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. You can email comments to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Learn English. I'm John.
Welcome to This is America in VOA Learning English. I'm Jim Tedder.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly. This week on our program, we talk about national parks in the United States.
The United States established its first national park in 1872. Yellowstone in the western state of Wyoming is home to grizzly bears, wolves, and other animals. Yellowstone was not only the first national park in America, it was the first in the world. Since then, about 100 nations have followed the example. They have established over 100,000 national parks and protected areas for the enjoyment of people today and generations to come.
The National Park Service in the United States manages a total of 401 units, as it calls them. These include national parks, historical sites, monuments, buildings, and battlefields. They also include recreation areas, seashores, rivers, trails, and parkways, almost 34 million hectares of land in all. Visitors can hike in the woods, climb mountains, photograph animals, explore Civil War battlefields, go swimming or river rafting, ride horses, or just enjoy a day outdoors with the beauty of nature.
The National Park Service was created in 1916. President Woodrow Wilson signed an act to make the National Park Service part of the Interior Department. The National Park Service has two main jobs. One is to protect the national parks. The other is to help visitors enjoy them. In 2009, Director Ken Burns made a movie about the history of the national parks. He called them America's best idea. One way the National Park Service is able to operate is through the fees it charges. 133 sites charge entrance fees between $5 and $25. Each entrance fee is good for 7 days. However, visitors can buy a yearly pass for $80. And people over 62 years old can buy a lifetime pass for $10. A free lifetime pass is offered to people with disabilities. In 2012, almost 287 million people visited the American National Park System.
Today, the United States has 59 national parks. Wrangell St. Elias National Park and Preserve is the largest park in the United States. It is in Alaska and covers over 5 million hectares of land, larger than the size of Switzerland. Wrangell St. Elias sells permits only to do research. Scientific research of fisheries, climate change, pollution, rock formation, and ice mountains takes place in the park. The park also includes historic areas where the Athabascan people lived thousands of years ago. Villages, camping, and hunting areas of the Athabascan people can be found in the area. The park has many historical structures and buildings of other prehistoric groups. The National Park Service says the structures represent periods of exploration, mining, and transportation.
The smallest preserve in the United States is the Tadeusz Kosciuszko National Memorial. The memorial is in Kosciuszko's home in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was a military engineer who left Poland to help fight for independence for the United States. He is known for the battle sites and forts he built during the American Revolution. His greatest assistance was preparing for the defense of Saratoga. The Battle of Saratoga is one of the most famous in the struggle for independence from the British.
The places under the care of the National Park Service are not all refuges of peace and quiet. Some are historic sites in the middle of busy cities. For example, Fort Stevens is located in Washington, D.C., off a busy road that goes between Maryland and Washington. During the American Civil War, Union soldiers protected Washington at Fort Stevens. On July 12, 1864, President Abraham Lincoln visited Fort Stevens to witness the battle. He was shot at by opposing Confederate soldiers. The event was the only time in American history that a serving president was shot at by an enemy fighter.
One of the most memorable units is Mesa Verde National Park in Colorado. Spanish explorers had named the area. The high, flat mountaintop is covered with many green juniper and pine trees. It looks like a huge green table, a Mesa Verde in Spanish. A man named Richard Wetherill and his brother-in-law rediscovered the area in 1888 when they were trying to find some missing cattle. The two men came to the edge of a deep canyon. Through the falling snow, they saw what looked like a small city across the canyon. It was suspended in the middle of the rock wall. There were many connected rooms built into a natural opening in the rock.
It looked as if the people who had lived there had just walked out, leaving everything they owned. Cooking pots by the fireplaces, food bowls on the floors, shoes in the corners, digging sticks by the doors. The ruins had been home to the ancestors of the present-day members of the Pueblo tribes. They were named Anasazi, or Ancient Ones, by the Navajo Indians. They moved to Mesa Verde about 1,500 years ago and left 700 years ago.
Today, from a distance, Mesa Verde appears as it did centuries ago. It rises more than 540 meters above the floor of the valley. Visitors can drive up to the top of Mesa Verde on a winding mountain road. When you reach the top, you are 2,400 meters above sea level. In the distance are the flatlands and mountains of the Four Corners area. That is where the states of Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona meet. Some of the ruins in the Four Corners area belong to the earliest people who lived there. They were hunters and gatherers, now known as basket makers. The basket makers lived in simple caves. Their civilization existed 2,000 years ago.
The first evidence that ancient people had moved to Mesa Verde is from about the year 500. Those people lived in pit houses. Pit houses were large holes in the ground with roofs of wood and mud. In about the year 750, the early Pueblo people began building square structures of large connected rooms, or pueblos, above ground. Finally, in about 1100, they climbed down the canyon walls and began building cliff dwellings. Today, visitors to the park can see some of the remains of all four kinds of settlements.
Around Mesa Verde National Park, archaeologists have recovered many objects that the ancient people used: pots, tools, and jewelry. Many of the objects are shown in the visitor center. However, human remains or any object from a grave may not be touched or shown. This is to honor the wishes of the modern Puebloan people who live in the area today.
In 2012, the most visited area under the care of the National Park Service was the Blue Ridge Parkway in the eastern United States. The road goes almost 755 kilometers along the Blue Ridge Mountains between North Carolina and Virginia. The area is filled with wildlife and colorful flowers. It also includes some of the oldest prehistoric and European settlements. Workers began building the parkway during the Great Depression in the early 20th century as part of a program to help put people to work.
Another parkway is the Natchez Trace Parkway, which celebrated its 75th anniversary in 2013. It runs through Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Long before the parkway became an official road, local Indians hunted large animals in the area and created many paths. Later, the paths were linked and used for transportation, communication, and trade.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all our way, if we keep on the sunny side of life.
We leave you with a few words from one of the most famous residents of a national park, Yogi Bear. Yogi Bear is a cartoon character who first appeared on American television in the 1950s. He lives in Jellystone Park, a place that is a lot like Yellowstone Park.
Let me point out that we bears were here before you rangers, and we made out okay. Now it's don't do this and don't do that, and we're always tripping over the red tape.
But despite the rangers, Yogi Bear and his friend Boo Boo managed to steal a lot of picnic baskets. Then again, as he says, he is smarter than the average bear.
Our program was written by Nancy Steinbach and Kim Varzi. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Jim Tedder. For transcripts and podcasts of our programs, go to learningenglish.voanews.com. Join us again next week for This is America.
Say goodnight to wives they'll never know.